I am unashamed. What about you?
So Jep's coming in. We're doing some interviews about what we did.
Mm-hmm.
So Kay took that to mean, oh, it's a go. We're still in a holding pattern with the show. Nobody has said.
She is the queen of fake news, but not the malicious
down
kind.
Here.
Right.
Yeah.
Not the malicious kind that Trump talks about. It's her fake news is because she hears something and then in her mind she creates the news story.
And then it comes down to me, and I'm like, no, not the way it's going to work.
What did she tell you?
Well, she was just telling me what was fixing to happen. And I said, I don't think you're quite in tune with the powers that be. And she said, well, at least I have all my facilities together. I said, you have all your facilities. I
faculty?
Said, that would be faculties. She was like, faculty? She lied, you know.
So she, anytime that happens.
I like a happy woman when she butchers the English language. I said, honey, our facilities are like where you live here. These are the facilities where
are you looking around?
The faculties are in here. She was like, oh, really? I said, yeah.
Phil, were you looking around at the facilities to see what she was talking about? Or did
she
you?
She does have a lot of facilities.
Did you immediately she know she means faculties?
I just wanted to, in a kind way, show her that there's a difference between facilities, meaning your brain power, and these tangents that she gets in on. I said, look, honey, your faculties is what you need to work on, not your facilities.
Well, look, as soon as, wow. Dad, every time this happens, as soon as it happens, she calls me. Like, the laughter is just dying down. She calls me and says, you're not going to believe what I just said.
Let me explain something to you right now. Y'all are young bucks. You're young.
Phil, we're not young.
I know it.
We're younger than you.
But you're in your 50s. I'm just showing you what's coming
40s.
In the future. When you're women, there'll be some point where when they come in and they start on whatever they're starting in on, you're going to have to develop the quality of being able to. The audio's still there, but I've turned it off. It's like talking to an oak tree. It's not computing, but you got to learn to live with it, grin, and say, what's for dinner?
You have a mute button for your wife. Oh. You just mute her.
But it's unseen.
That's right.
I have trained my mute button so I can shut off children screaming.
We need a counselor. We need a marriage counselor to see if we can find somebody.
What's that sponsor we got that does the counseling? We need to get them
Faithful
involved.
Counseling. That's right. I don't know, though. It actually sounds like a pretty good plan.
Well, it's like when the law officers are trying to get a warrant, you know, you need a judge to sign off. We need a marriage counselor to sign off on that, Phil.
Well, I think it's what...
I've developed the art of two sentences in, especially if it's your woman of 50 to 60 years you've been running with. Two sentences in, I say, okay, mute button coming up. Bomb. Does not compute.
You have to keep in mind, though, where she may lack in some areas. Let me tell you one area she's never failed to forget on and or never failed to remember, which is when is payday. She's on top of payday. She'll call me 2 days in advance.
Right. She monitors
we getting paid
that.
We get paid this month. She's got that down.
Dad used
and
to
most of the time, it's I need to know how much we're getting because I'm giving away a lot.
That's exactly what it is.
Well, she, you know, her family ran a store. Her maiden name is Caraway. And so the running joke for the last 50 years of my life for Dad is, you know, there's that Caraway coming out at her. Because, you know, she is aware of the financial goings on. And look, Zach, I have to get asked three times. I'm like, call Zach. Because she's asking me, but I don't keep up with that.
How much money, the question is, how much money do you think she's poured out? And all I have to say is more than I can make.
Well, I'll tell you this, though. It made me think of one of her great qualities is that when she meets people, she treats everyone with the utmost respect, no matter whether they're a janitor, a cook in the back, or a lawyer. It you get the equal treat. Would you agree?
Look, we have a group of individuals that we meet with on Sunday morning. Some dude came up and got in trouble with the law, but he needed $20. And I said, see that girl with that big hat on? I said, see right back there? And he looked back there, you know, Miss K was sitting there, you know. And look, so she said, I said during the sermon, I said, by the way, Miss K, there's somebody looking for $20. I didn't give him the $20 because I didn't know quite for sure what it was for. She said, that's already, she's in the audience. I've already taken care of that. It was two of them, so $20 a piece. And I said, all right, good enough. And then the sermon continued. I know that's the way you operate with your woman.
Yeah. Well, no.
Well, look, I tell you a perfect story that highlights mom's quality that you mentioned, Jace. We were staying at the, we were doing something in New York. And so whenever we have to go, we stay in the Trump Hotel. We always did, even before Trump was president, because we like his hotel.
Is this the one I was escorted out of?
It is. It's okay. Different trip, but yeah, same hotel. And it faces Central Park. And it's just, I don't know, we're comfortable there.
You had to bring that up, because that's where he took me.
Yeah.
He led me to Central Park.
I know it.
By the way, while we're there.
We're not really anywhere, but go ahead.
When you're working with the human race, just remember this. Jesus said, the poor and the downtrodden will always be there. Help them. Somebody says, well, you shouldn't be generous to people because they'll misuse the funding that you're going to give them. They're trying to con you. In some cases, that's the truth. But here's the key. If you're generous, what they do with your generosity is up to them. You give them the word, fear God, love your neighbor. Yes, I will help you out. You have done a good deed. What they do with the money, whether they take it and go get high or drunk, is on them. You were kind and you were generous and you overlook the ones that just slick you.
That is true. But
you learn to live with that, or you'll never help anyone.
Well,
that's true, but you will draw every con man in the world.
Well, you get a few of those. Thing. You get a few of those. So we're at the Trump and I go by to pick up mom and dad because I'm kind of getting them where we're supposed to go. And mom said, oh, come here. I want you to meet my new best friend. And so we walk across the hall to another room, not even mom's room, and the door is open. And there's a woman in there cleaning the room. And she said, this is Lily, my new best friend. And she goes over and they hug. You know, and then she said, this is my oldest son, Al. And then she starts
fascinated by how she's gotten to the hugging stage.
That's what I'm saying. I mean,
it's a short period.
But in the moment and the woman, but you could tell what I loved about it was, is that this woman is around famous people in this hotel all the time because we've seen a lot of them there.
And she speaks broken English.
Broken English. And yet mom made her feel like she was the most important person in the world.
That's right.
And I could tell that woman what she did for her in that moment was something she'll never forget, you know, because I'm sure she's been mistreated. I'm sure she's been yelled at, cursed at. And so to me, it was like that encapsulates mom. That's her. Yep. 'Cause she made this little, you know, immigrant woman, you know, feel special and feel like she was the most important
when
person.
When it comes to tipping, I don't even have to worry about it because trust me, I've got a woman of 50, 60 years. I've been running with her. Tips are in with her.
Me too.
If you're a waitress and you come over there, she says, you're working so hard. Look out because she's in her billfold.
Well, that's the story I was going to tell when I was in Missouri on this trip. Because you know how now there's this something going on in our world now where there's not enough workers. I mean, there's restaurants have been closed off and on because they can't find people to work.
Because the government's been sending them a bunch of money.
Yeah. So I mean, it's become an issue. And so when I was on this trip, well, the hotel I was staying at, when I was leaving, I was headed, we did the event the night before, but this was an obscure place. We live in an obscure place, so I had to stay the night, then fly out the next morning. Well, when I was waiting on the elevator, this woman comes out of nowhere like a whirlwind. She's wiping down the walls. I mean, she had the little uniform on. She's working there. But she was working like in a way that was so grand. I mean, it was as fast and as hard as humanly possible. And nobody was watching. I mean, except me, but she just come in front of me. She actually hit the button for the elevator because she was, you know, on her way by. Yeah. I was like, perfect. This woman, I mean, she's a whirlwind, you know? So she came back behind me. I was like, hey, And she looked up at me. Of course, you know, it's we got masks on, you know, in the hotel. I said, I just want to tell you, you are one of the greatest workers I've ever seen. Well done. But she just, it's like she did, I put her in a trance, you know. It was like, what are we doing?
She'd probably never been complimented for her work.
I said, well, look, I said, my mom, who is the best part of our family, I said, she taught me at a young age to, you know, to be sociable and to acknowledge, you know, people in their work. I was trying to, because I was like, she probably thinks, because I thought maybe she's looking at me like a threat because I'm making conversation. Mm. You forget how you look. And she was like, oh, that's a great quality and, you know, this and that. So I get on the elevator. I'm thinking that's the end of it. Well, when I get down to the bottom and open it, she's standing there. And I thought, did she run down the stairs? And she said, you know who you look like? And I was like, who's that? She said, there was a guy, there was some guys that my husband used to watch on TV. I said, well, you did it. Because I'm one of those guys. She's like, what are you doing here? You know, my husband, you know, he just wouldn't believe it. And I was like, well, I came up here to share Jesus with these people. She was like, really? I mean, she's like, well, what are y'all doing now after the show? I said, this is what we're doing. This is it.
This is what we do.
This is what we
do. Talking to you.
And so she's like, well, can we take a picture? Because my husband's not going to believe it. And I said, well, what does your husband do? And she's like, well, he works in a cemetery. I said, oh. I said, so he's a believer. Because I don't know why I made that connect. I was talking about Jesus. And you know, she's like, what do you do? I was like, he's believing. She's like, no. I said, he's working in a cemetery and he doesn't know about Jesus? And she's like, I mean, should he? I said, should he? What? And so I launched into the conversation. Well, how are you going to come back from the dead? I said, well, how does he treat you? She's like, not as good as he should. I said, well, we fixed to fix that right now.
She's you like, turned into an elevator counselor.
Oh, it just went into a Jesus proclamation. Then I told her, I was like, well, we actually have this podcast. She's like, podcast? And she's like, I mean, how much does it cost? It's free. She's like, free? It's free? And she's like, and I can get my husband to act better? I said, oh, yeah, it's going to happen. I was like, if you're wondering. I said, and if Jesus comes back while he's working, it will be the greatest show on earth. Exactly. He has the front row seat,
that's right.
But he doesn't even have the ticket.
He's going to be shocked.
Yeah. I was like, you know, and I actually use that because I use that line in my speech. I say, there's two kinds of people. Those who are ready for when he comes back and those who will be surprised. You don't be working in a graveyard that's and right. Then you're surprised when the ground starts moving.
That's right.
I was like, you want to say, okay, this is what I do this job for. Because it sure as heck ain't for the money.
I can't tell you how many times I live right next door to Roselawn, which is one of our big cemeteries here locally, for about 16 years. And I did a lot of graveside services in there, including some of our family. But every time I would always say the same thing. At the resurrection, this place is going to be amazing. Yeah. I mean, and look, this is where I want to be because that's where all my mentors are. This is going to be the place I want to come and head out because I know all these people. We're gonna go on a massive ride.
But I brought that up because if mom wasn't like that, I could have just gotten the elevator. And never said a word, but it actually launched into what I thought was a God moment on the trip.
And then
when that moment happens, always remember there'll be two kinds of crowds. A little bitty crowd is going to be running toward him. A huge crowd is going to be running the other way.
That's true.
Good point.
That's a good point. Let's take a break. So, Zach, you still holding on to all your hair? Unless you're like me, you wear a lot of hats. You got any thinning spots there?
Yeah, it's moving backwards.
Someone told me recently, Zach, that you're really not losing your hair. Your forehead's just growing. I said, well.
Growing to a five head. It's moving from a forehead to a five head.
There you go. Well, one of the things that one of our sponsors, our long-term sponsors, does is try to help you keep your hair when you begin to lose it. They can't do anything once it's gone, but when you start losing it, their product can help you keep it. They've got more five-star reviews than any of their competitors. Hundreds of thousands of guys have trusted Keeps for their hair loss prevention. So you might want to check these guys out. If you're starting to lose it, they'll ship it straight to your door. You go to their website, they're going to, you know, give you some information and get checked out with a doctor, make sure you can take the product. Keeps.com/door, and you get 50% off your first order of hair loss treatments. That's keeps.com/door. Hang on to your hair. Yeah, that's what 1 Thessalonians and 2 Thessalonians say, right? I mean, that's going to be a great moment or a terrible moment, depending on where you are. Well, hopefully, Jace, that'll open the door for the.
Oh, I loved it. You know,
you can spot them right then, because the godly will be running toward him, and the ungodly will be trying to run away and hide.
Yeah,
but you know, it also is a lesson in character. I mean, this woman, who knows? You know, I barely met her. But that quality of character of being a hard worker, it just comes out.
Yeah.
It trumps, you know, wasn't that Martin Luther King that said it's not the color of the skin that matters, it's the quality of the character. You know, yeah. I mean, he was right. As a believer, he is right.
Yeah, he was right.
Because in that moment, I was like, man, what a woman here. Right. You know, it was impressive. Yeah. Well, and then I think God led the encounter.
Some woman told me yesterday, Ed, she just after we met together, I think to walk out the door, you know, she ran up to me. She said, "This is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. I just want to let you know." She said, "I'll be here every time." I said, "Hey, glad, welcome aboard, girl."
Yeah. But you're right, Jason. A lot of it goes to how you come up. You know, we all worked hard. I mean, I had a lot of jobs around town. One of them was sacking groceries for probably a year when I was in high school. And, you know, every time a kid takes my groceries out to my truck now, I always tip them. Mm-hmm. And the reason I do that is because I remember what it was like 40 years ago to be that kid. Yeah. You know, most people are not going to do it, but I'm thinking I still remember what that meant for somebody to slip me, you know, a little bit of cash that was a little extra.
Change.
Yeah, just for doing that work, you know. So I think that's the kind of
hard. I waited tables at Bennigan's when it first opened up in West Monroe, and I'm sitting in there, and I was a pretty good waiter, but you know, you get a big tip, you remember it, and all of a sudden Willie comes in and asked to sit at my table. So I'm like, oh, great.
Where's this going?
Of course, he's.
I know where this is going.
He's like running me ragged. All he orders is like a Diet Coke and like a chips and salsa or something. He's just more chips, more salsa. And he just, the whole time, it's just Willie. He's by himself.
He came out to torture you. That's why
he goes to a restaurant by themselves anyway.
Willie.
No, that's my point. It was horrible. So he's running me the whole time. Well, then I go to the back, I come back, and he's gone at the end of the dinner. And you know how they got those black folders that they put the credit cards in?
Yep.
And you put the bill in at the restaurant. So it's one of those things, but it's like, it's like wide open, like Pac-Man's mouth, you know? And I look in there, and he's got pennies and dollar bills. I mean, he's got about $150 of just change into a huge ball that he shoved into this. So it was worth it, but I had to unfold every dollar bill. I had to get the change. I mean, it was a great tip, but I probably spent, you know, a lot of time earning that, trying to get it fit in my billfold.
Well, Zach, I don't know if you knew this, but on the I think it was the last time we had Willie on the podcast. It was Jace's birthday, and he gave him
$50
bills. And he had them all. He had taken every one, or somebody had, and put them in little individual wrappers.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I'm sure one of his minions did that. But it was, hey, I'm not knocking him. Mine and his relationship was repaired from that moment. So this misnomer that money can't repair anything.
I tried to plant the seed that we would have him back on my birthday. Yeah. And $100 bills.
I found
would
a new
be an
kind
even
of man.
Better gift.
I found a new kind of man, and he's generous. And guess what? He's my brother.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's funny, Zach. I never heard that story, but that's very classic, Willie.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's what he does.
So I'm gonna take some of those. I still have a few of those in the envelope still, because it's kind of the first
pretty tight picture. Well, how long ago was this?
The problem is like when you give somebody an envelope with that they have some kind of glue on it when they glued it. Well, you can't get the. I mean, he probably did it on purpose, kind of like you, because you can't get the 50 out. So the first two, I ripped open the envelope, I ripped the 50.
Oh, my word.
And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, buddy. And I'm like, I'm going to tape this back together. So I've just like, I basically re-gift them various things.
What's funny is we, years ago, Mom had the idea, I mean, this is a long time ago, that she was going to give us all a $50 bill for Christmas. Because she always gives us money at Christmas, even now, which is so funny. But so she put the $50 bill in there. Well, somebody got their card got swept up in all the trash from the wrapping paper.
I thought it was you.
No. Maybe me, yeah. And so, and it got burned up because somebody had the big idea, let's burn all this tonight.
And that's against the law.
To burn the money?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of money.
It was probably Willie that did it because he's a little pyromaniac. So they burned the $50 bill. Well, Mom just... It was like you had just, you know, stolen money from her. I mean, she could not get over it. And so that's been 25 years ago. She never has given cash since, only checks.
Yeah.
She changed her policy because that way if that check gets burned up, we hadn't lost the thing. But that's been a 25 or 30-year policy.
Yeah, it kind of loses its luster, though. You know, Phil and Mom, they'd always, anytime they wanted to get you to do something, there was always a crisp $100 bill involved. And
that's
the way they would describe it, you're like, oh, it's crisp, as if it's worth more money if it's crisp. But,
that's right. How many times have you been told that, Jason? If this happens, that is one crisp $100 bill.
But the actual payoff happened maybe 10% of the time.
I did get
that. That was the genius of it. That whatever the thing was, it was so big, you're never going to accomplish it. So they knew.
We were the last day of duck season. It was now that I think back, it was a pretty slow year because we had like 690 ducks that year. And so the thing was, we got to get to 700. And then Dad said, and we were kind of doing a divide and conquer hunt where we just kind of spread across the property. But it was whoever kills the 700th duck gets a crisp $100 bill. Of course, we laugh because we thought, oh, yeah, $100 bill. And then we spread out. So then we're having a text back and forth. You hear boom, boom, boom. It's like, all right, what was that? So we're having somebody's got to keep a running tally to know who actually got 700. And wouldn't you know that the least hunter, me, killed two mallard drakes, and one of them was number 700, and I had to cross a deep trench. I got water all my waders, but when I got back, was going to get that duck. It was worth $100. And
no,
I
remember because I said, don't do that. And y'all did it.
It was dangerous.
I said, don't do that.
Did you get paid?
I got paid. We all came back.
Well, he risked his life for the $100 bill. It was his Esau moment.
That's right. You have to be careful.
Because I said, don't cross that ditch. But
Zach, the human race being what it is, after our audience has heard this conversation, you have a big bulk of letters coming. I'm in a bind. Get me out of it. I don't want but $25,000. I got on drugs, and I don't know what I was doing, but all the money's gone. If you'll give me the $25,000, which is not that much if you think about it. I get letters like that
what you have.
All the time, but there's going to be a plethora of letters now.
I may go back to the Willie line when the guy came up to him at church and said, God told me to tell you, God told me you were going to give me $50,000 to seed my business. I think it was Willie.
Yeah, it was Willie.
He said, well, he should have told me and skipped the middleman.
I can't tell you how many business meetings we've been in the past where that was exactly what was said. Willie said, well, I'm still waiting for him to tell me about how to do this. So
it's actually a good line.
Pretty good. Let's take another break. I think all four of us can probably say that through the years, we've probably provided a lot and received a lot of wise counsel from other experienced people. In my case, I went to professional counseling, a wonderful Christian lady here locally who really helped Lisa and I sort of, you know, put us back together and be a guide. Because I always say a good counselor is a good guide. One of our sponsors is a group called Faithful Counseling. And what they provide is the ability to be able to get counseling online, because it's not always easy in different communities to find a good counselor, and especially to find a Christian counselor that has a, you know, faith worldview. They have over 3,000 U.S. licensed therapists all across the U.S. You can do text, chat, phone, video. So, and within 24 hours, you can be talking to someone, which I know when you need it usually sooner rather than later. So check these guys out. If you have a counseling need, it's called faithfulcounseling.com/unashamed. That's faithfulcounseling.com/unashamed. You're going to fill out a questionnaire. They're going to assess your needs, and then they're going to match you with a counselor that you'll love. So check them out. So we're in Matthew 10, kind of just wrapping that up. And I think it was really good because it was kind of his mission, as we talked about last time, to the disciples. And yesterday, Jace, was our One Kingdom Sunday at WFR. And the name of our Ryan Lee was kind of in charge. He's a worship leader, but he's also the director of One Kingdom. So once a year, we have basically a day where we just talk about missions and what we're trying to do and what we're doing around the world. And then everything that's contributed that day goes to our mission ministry. Yeah. And I know you're going to be going to Greece pretty soon.
I am. I'll give you a report.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear about that, because that's one of our best works is what's happening there with a guy named Larry Bowles. But we called it Speak Jesus, and the idea was is that Mike and I started out, we have to hear the words of Jesus first. In other words, Jesus speaks to us, and then in turn, we go and speak Jesus to other people. And I think that's exactly what you see in Matthew 10 is the words of Jesus, because I mentioned this before. Mark and Luke, when they're telling this story, they don't go into it near as much detail as Matthew does. They just had one little section of this. So for whatever reason, I think Matthew thought it was important that in his recording of this speech that Jesus gives to his disciples, that they understood that, look, this is not going to be easy. When you speak Jesus, I mean,
all men will hate you because of me.
Yeah.
But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. That's a pretty bold statement, that all men will hate you because of me.
Right.
Well, and then he also
not
said
a whole lot has changed since then.
He who receives you receives me. That's Matthew 10:40. He who receives me receives the one who sent me, which I like that. You know, Jesus came representing God the Father, and we represent Jesus, who represents God the Father. That's the trickle down on being public for Jesus.
Yeah, and that's how we kind of split up our sermon. Jesus speaks, and then we speak to other people. And so that's kind of the concept.
There are many cases in America right now, if you looked at it, back then, a man's enemies will be the members of his own household. It actually, because of Jesus, it breaks up, because you have one follower of Jesus and one who is disdain, just hates it. This thing about, you know, get that Bible out of my face. Mm-hmm. I mean, even within a family structure, it's broken up many homes.
Right.
What I was shocked about in Matthew 11 was that how we get it wrong, how we, and I mean we as humanity, it's kind of our narrative on what we think Jesus should be like and who Jesus is, you know, in his narrative. Because really, of all people, you would think John the Baptist would never ask a question like he asked. And if I just read it, you know, in chapter 11, verse 1, after Jesus had finished instructing his 12 disciples, he went on from there to preach and teach in the towns of Galilee.
Which is another transition. You know, you can see his transition to the next thing.
When John heard in prison, which is interesting, I'm not even sure how he heard that in prison, what Christ was doing, he sent his disciples to ask him, are you the one who was to come, or should we expect someone else? It's a strange question.
It is a strange question.
Because you would think, well, weren't you the one who was going to prepare the way? But I think this, now y'all can tell me what y'all think. I think he asked that because he had it in his mind, his narrative was that this is fiery judgment. We're taking over the world. And then when you look at his speeches and what he's doing, and blessed are the meek and the poor in spirit, and we're going to help others and be compassionate. Well, he's like, are you the one, or is this, or somebody else coming? Where's the fire? Yep. Where's the vengeance? Well, yeah. When are we taking over the world? I'm in prison.
Yeah.
And you're talking about being compassionate and being persecuted and turning the other cheek. And I mean, I don't know what y'all thoughts on that.
No, I agree 100%. And I think just like all the disciples who were with Jesus for 3 years missed the big picture. They understood about Messiah. They understood about Son of God, but they didn't understand about the kingdom. And they didn't, because they were all thinking physical kingdom. And I think you're right, Jace. I think the question, I think two, the way I've always seen it is two ways. One is that John didn't quite understand that. He's still thinking physical Israel. The second thing was, I really, to me, it shows the humanity of any of us. John stuck in prison. By the way, you can read about it in Matthew 14 on why he was in prison. The reason he was there is because he called out the king about his relationship, which was an adulterous relationship. And so that's why he got thrown. So in other words, he wasn't afraid. I mean, if he spoke that much truth to power, but I think in that moment, he thought everything I'm expecting, you're right. Those words that came from the sermon, which somebody must've repeated to him. He said, this is not what I expected.
Yeah.
It's the same thing that Peter did in you remember in the garden, right? When they came in, yeah, he's like, okay, let's roll. It's time to fight. And so he pulls the sword out. He cuts off the soldier's ear. I would rephrase it, though. I don't know if I would say it's not necessarily the physical, because the kingdom is physical, because we're physical and we are the kingdom. So it is physical. I think that
meant physical power, as in a place on the planet. Yeah.
Military, by the way,
conquering, but kingdom, they're thinking conquer. You, what do the kingdoms do? Right. Yeah, you move in, you destroy the village, you take all their plunder, and you move on.
That's right. But
Jesus' answer to that was, go back and report to John what you hear and see. Make sure you tell him this. Hey, John, the blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is preached to the poor. And he said, blessed is the man who does not fall away on account of me. Then Jesus goes through this thing, I'll tell you the truth. And he said, look, who'd you go out to see, a prophet? He said, I tell you, more than a prophet. And he talked about no one greater than John the Baptist, yet who's least in the kingdom is greater than he. From the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven has been forcibly advancing.
Which is my point. They didn't think it was.
Yeah, all the prophets prophesied about him. And if you're willing to accept it, he's the Elijah who was to come. He who has ears, let him hear. So he clarifies the whole thing on the role of John the Baptist and lining him out on what's going down.
Yeah.
The one you are representing is here on the earth, and the kingdom is coming. Forcefully.
Yeah. Let's take another break.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st, for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit FearlessArmyRollCall.com to secure your spot.
Yeah, my point is that what they're missing is the power dynamic. So you see the same thing today with people in the church. Like they think of this thing's coming with power, and they're obsessed with this power dynamic. You see it right now with this debate on the whole critical theory and critical race it's about power dynamics and who's an oppressor and who's oppressed, and we got to take power back, and it's an obsession with power. And then right in the middle of all of that is the gospel, who is this powerful God who empties himself and becomes human flesh. Philippians chapter 2, it's he made himself nothing. God takes on and becomes a servant. The first shall be last. And so what the gospel is doing and the kingdom is a total, it just obliterates humanistic power structures, because what the kingdom is, it's flowing from who God is, who is all powerful, yet doesn't necessarily use that as his mechanism. He uses humility in the incarnation of Jesus. I mean, you think about it, the gospel itself is the supreme, powerful creator allowed humans to get their hands on him and kill him.
Yeah.
Well, that's a weird power dynamic, right?
And twice during all of this, in 11 and 12, Jesus said, I think he did it at least twice, I tell you that it would be more bearable for Sodom on the day of judgment than for you. He brings up Sodom and Gomorrah a couple of times, which they're saying, where's all this? There's a lot of punishment coming in with all this for the ones who reject Jesus. He inserts that
But he was saying that's later. I mean, you got to remember, when he said report what you see and hear, well, they'd already had this cricket sermon, the manifesto and the Sermon on the Mount, because they're all gathered around like, we're going to take over the world. He's the Messiah. Yeah, what's our game plan? And then he comes up with stuff like this. You've heard that you're supposed to love your neighbor, and I'm sure everybody's like, amen, hallelujah. And then he's like, well, I say you love your enemy. Well, wait a minute here. I thought we were here to conquer the enemy.
To destroy them.
Love them? What? And then even stuff like about the treasures, don't store up for yourself treasures. That goes against everything a military invasion and conquering. You take their treasures. They're like, don't worry about it. And then he gets it. Don't worry about what you eat or what you wear or where you're going to sleep. Well, all of a sudden, this becomes a cricket sermon.
Right.
You're like, where's the power in this? We're going to be a bunch of wandering gypsies going around helping people that have things wrong with them? That's why he was talking about helping the blind and the poor. I mean, it just was not appealing. And I think that's why John said, is there somebody else coming?
Right.
Well, why did they reject Jesus in this Matthew 11? What they basically saw who he was hanging out with in Matthew 11:16 and on, it says, when John the Baptist came eating, he wasn't eating nor drinking, and they said, he has a demon. But when they saw the Son of Man, he's hanging out, and he's eating and drinking with people, he's drinking alcohol. And they said, behold, a gluttonous man and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. So they're looking at Jesus and they're saying, that's not how he should come. He should come as sitting on the throne. He shouldn't come hanging out with these people. But I love this next line. Wisdom is vindicated by her deeds. In other words, look at what he did. What did he do? He helped people.
Exactly.
They didn't see that. They thought he came to conquer people. He's like, no, I came to help people and give them life that they might live it abundantly.
Yeah, before we throw the culture under the bus, because usually people say, well, the culture got it wrong. Well, John the Baptist had it wrong. I mean, in a moment of weakness.
He did.
Because it was hard for him to digest these principles. The Pharisees got it wrong. The religious leaders, his followers got it wrong. The culture had it wrong. And look, in modern day, we get it wrong. That you miss Jesus.
More than that. For the same reasons.
Same reasons.
They say Jesus.
It doesn't. What people do in our world is they have a picture of how they think the kingdom of God should look like, and then they go here and try to fit this into that narrative, which is easy to do with the Bible. You can basically come up with any idea, as crazy as it sounds, and find obscure, out of context passages and build a case for it. And there'll be people who say, yeah, especially if it pleases yourself,
right.
or if you have selfish motives in whatever the venture is.
How many times have you heard, well, y'all are just using this as a crutch? And we say, yeah.
Exactly. Well, I've had people say, I can't believe that you think, this wine, that Jesus turned water into wine, was actually you know, alcohol. Now, because now you say, well, why would somebody say that? Because his narrative of what the Son of God was like, that doesn't fit. No. But we have red letters that seem like that's what went down. Well, then you have another supporting passage that says, and this is him speaking of himself, the Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, here's a glutton and a drunkard. Well, how do you get a reputation for being a drunkard if you never drank? When you said you did. You see?
That's pretty clear. But I think it also shows you how difficult it is for people, once you got your mind made up that something's going to be a certain way. Jesus, that's the whole point of this whole thing, is that he's coming in and completely turning this thing upside down. There was a little passage, I want to go back to it, because we didn't discuss it. We were in Matthew 9, verse 14. But I think it sort of shows you how some of this support that Jesus had sort of unraveled. You remember in verse 14, John's disciples came and asked him, how is it that we and the Pharisees fast? So now it's John the Baptist's disciples and the Pharisees together, but your disciples do not fast. I mean, that's criticism. He's criticizing Jesus. Jesus said, how can the guests of the bridegroom mourn while he's still with them? The time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them, and then they will fast. In other words, you're not understanding the plan here. But then he says something even more amazing. No one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, for the patch will pull away from the garment, making the tear worse. Neither do men pour new wine into old wineskins. If they do, the skins will burst, the wine will run out, and the wineskins will be ruined. No, they pour new wine into new wineskins, and both are preserved. So one is, it's another reference to wine, but what he's saying is I'm giving you something completely new in me. But even John and his disciples and everybody else had a hard time wrapping their mind about exactly what that was. I mean, that's how clear it is.
John recorded, even after the resurrection, said they still did not understand that Jesus had to be raised from the dead.
Right.
They just couldn't. Yeah. And right now, to tell anybody this, especially learned people, they would say, do you actually believe that a dead man died and 3 days later was raised from the dead? You say, if it's written, that's what I believe.
Let's take our last break. That's exactly right.
I wanted to say something about this, because I think what's missed, because if you think about this statement Jesus said, because this is the point. When he said, among those born of a woman, there's not risen anyone greater than John the Baptist. So, which flies in the face of every narrative on what religious people think you should look like, because he had animal skins, he lived in the woods, he looked crazy, he was real bold in his sermons.
He looked like you, Jace.
Well, yeah, exactly. But then he makes this statement, yet he who is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. So for years, I was wondering, what did he mean by that? He just said he was the greatest human ever. And then he's like, but whoever's least in the kingdom, well, then it finally hit me one day that he was missing, what John was missing by asking that question, is what's coming. This kingdom is at hand. You don't realize what people are fixing to get who are in this kingdom. They're going to get the Holy Spirit of God indwelling in them, mm-hmm. which the least one that has that, I mean, he may be a pinky in the body of Christ, because we have pinkies and pinky toes.
Toenails.
And toenail members. But hey, they're in. They're greater because of what's fixing to happen, the Spirit, because we know how this is transitioning. But I think it's a key verse for people who don't think the kingdom has been established, because why would he make a statement like that?
Yeah.
I don't see how it makes sense any other way besides that comparison.
Well, because what happens is it still sort of misses the whole big point of why he came, which is, you have to keep going back to that. And again,
the path to immortality, it's a winding road.
That's right.
To me, it compares to me. It's like my assistant does all this work. I mean, for months, lining up, planning these events. But she has no idea what I'm going to say. And most of the time, she's not even there for the speech. I mean, she's just working. I know nothing about that. So then when the event, by the time the event comes together and I'm going out there, well, she's not even... She's not even a part of it.
Her work is done.
Yeah, she's missed the moment here, you know. To me, I thought about it like that. Didn't mean what she didn't do was important. You had to have it, and it was for a reason. But for her to try to then understand what I'm doing in this moment, she's going to have to come out here and sit down and listen and watch.
That's a great analogy. And, you know, one of the things that I always think about with John the Baptist and this question in particular, because remember, he came in the spirit of Elijah. In other words, it was that sort of prophet. That's who he was. And I always think back to that 1 Kings 19, after Mount Carmel, when Elijah had this great victory, but the king and queen still weren't convinced, which was he was crushed. And in that moment, he went out and sat down under a tree and said, you know what, Lord, I give up. Just take me on to be with you right now, because obviously I can't convince these people to believe in you and trust you. So he had the same moment to me in that moment that John the Baptist had sitting in that jail cell, which shows you how hard it is, even for people like this with their character and their faith and all that, to still struggle.
This is not working out good for me.
That's exactly right. Hmm. I mean, it gives me a lot of hope when I have doubts or when I struggle, because I'm like, hey, if John the Baptist and Elijah struggled with, you know, really trusting in the moment, why would I not struggle?
But it also makes us realize that don't get a narrative in your mind.
Correct.
And make up your mind about, you got to be open to seeing, right, this is God's work, not ours.
Right.
And I mean, I think that's the point he's giving. If you just base this on what you physically see, Jesus or John the Baptist, no way you're getting in on this.
Yeah. It's crazy.
You walk up and see a guy sitting at a party, and they're like, there's the Son of God over there. He's sitting in there. He's not doing anything wrong, but boy, he's right up on the line. I'm not sure what kind of example this is setting. You know, there's no way you're following that. You're like, no, this is not what we want to do. We want to take over the world. But in actuality, Jesus did take over the world.
Yeah.
And we are the most powerful people on the planet. It was just not the way we can see it or would have done it.
But don't you love the way Jesus defends John ultimately at the end and his character? Because he ultimately says, hey, there's no one greater than this guy. I mean, he's amazing. He's wonderful. But then to your point, Jesus is like, but look, that's the beauty of this kingdom, is that even the least will be greater than he. This is, I mean, he came to do, even though he may be having some moments, he still is the man.
Yeah, it was actually a hint of what's fixing to happen is way greater than anything that has happened, which ultimately it's him dying, being buried, being raised, people surrendering that, the evil one's defeated, we have the Holy Spirit.
And he allowed John to be slaughtered.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. By the way, he didn't get out of jail.
Your gig's up, that's right.
With his head attached to the rest of it. I mean, he died there as a martyr. He was really the first martyr through this process.
Oh, yeah.
Because of how strong he was.
Well, you see that.
And immortality was his.
That's exactly right.
I mean, we're going to get to it, but in the next chapter in 12, we don't have to get into it in depth. But he makes the same analogy in verse 39 when he's like, this wicked and adulterous generation that asked for a miraculous sign. Well, you would think, just because you asked for a miracle, why is that so upsetting to Jesus? I mean, he's like, you wicked. I mean, if you went to a church building and asked for a miracle, they'd say, we'll see what we can do. But they wouldn't say, well, you wicked adultery. How dare you come in here and ask for a miracle? But his point was, and he gave this analogy about the sign of Jonah. Well, what was the whole thing about? It was all it was an illustration to show that one day he would die, be buried, and raised like Jonah got swallowed
by
a fish. With
the 3 days, yeah.
Well, that doesn't fit any narrative on any planet in any culture. You're like, oh, so you're going to be like a guy one time that got swallowed by a fish and then 3 days later got spit out?
They laugh.
They're like, how about just give us the miracle?
Yeah.
He's like, no.
What they're saying is they're saying, give us they want to consume the merit of Christ or the miracles of Christ
or the
whatever
power.
The thing is, or the power of Christ.
Yeah, that's right.
And they're like, what they're saying is, we want to be autonomous, but we want all your benefits. So we want the benefits of you without you. And yeah. And I think that's the thing that Jesus said, like, you're missing the whole thing then, because I am the prize. It's not eternal life autonomously on your own. It's life with me inside the inner life of God with Father, Son, Holy Spirit. That's it. That's heaven. That's
which is my point. My foundational point, though, is if you want to miss Jesus, whether you're in the church or outside of it, come up with a narrative that's not his and then try to make it fit. You can be wrong about something, because I've been wrong on issues ever since I've been in Jesus. I mean, because you read and study, and then you're like, oh, you know what? I think I was wrong about that. But there's some openness that has come to my character because of that, because I realize this is not about me trying to fit God into my world.
Right.
That's just the wrong way to look at it, where it's comfortable. Because a lot of what he's asking you to do in your character and surrender is very uncomfortable.
You know, I always thought about this section, and we'll close with this, is that Jesus has, up to this point, has been very popular. People are following him. A lot of people are questioning him. And then all of a sudden, when you really start to get into why he came and what he's saying, opposition is rising.
Ravaging wolves.
I think it had something to do with that Sermon on the Mount.
I do too.
Look, I'm telling you, it was a cricket sermon.
And that's what I always said about us. You know, we created a lot of opposition, you know, Dad in particular. But I always say people will love you until they get to know you. And then if you're a person of strong conviction and character, people are going to be offended and oppose you.
That's
correct. It's just what happens. So I think that's exactly where we are here. All right, we'll pick up in 11:20 next time.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube. And be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.